From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, a new report finds a lost decade for New Yorkers. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on Governor Cuomo and upstate politics. And we mark the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington and its impact on New York today. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. A new report on the status of workers finds the period since 2008's market crash may turn out to be a lost decade for New Yorkers as wages stagnate and the average time for unemployment lengthens. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt has more.
The union-financed think tank, the Fiscal Policy Institute, finds the current economic recovery continues to be the weakest on record since the Great Depression of the 1930s. FBI economist James Parrott says while New York overall had the sixth best job growth performance among all 50 states, the rate of unemployment stayed above 8% for 4 years until it dropped slightly in April. Economists consider it a recession when the jobless rate is 8% or higher. Parrott says the average length of time that unemployed New Yorkers have been out of work is 37 weeks, or about 8 months. That's longer than the national average of 7 months. He says the lengthy periods of joblessness have ripple effects that range from defaulting on payments for houses and cars to depleting retirement savings to health problems.
There's a lot of research about the effects of long periods of unemployment on people's health, their self-esteem. Divorce rates are higher among people who have been unemployed for long periods of time. Their health is poor. Suicide rates are measurably higher. And their lifetime earnings take a hit and suffer as a result of it.
College-educated unemployed New Yorkers are out of work longer on average than high school graduates. Older workers also have to wait longer to find new jobs, and they're often lower paying than the positions that they lost. What job growth has occurred has been in lower paying industries like restaurants and retail. Parrott says those who are still lucky enough to have jobs have not seen pay increases that keep up with living expenses, and in some cases have seen their salaries cut.
Wages in 2012 were less than what they were in 2002. Even for the workers, you know, still working, their real incomes, their wages are not keeping pace.
The survey finds there's a wide gap between the financial conditions of downstaters compared to upstaters. New York City is doing relatively well. There are nearly 5% more jobs than before the recession began in 2008. But wide swaths of upstate are mired in recession, with an average of 1.6% fewer jobs than before 2008. The exceptions are Long Island and the Ithaca area, where jobs are growing faster than the national average. Parrott attributes New York City's success to the government's massive financial bailout of Wall Street.
And we're done on an enormous scale to put this wall-to-wall safety net under the finance system. And then there was the stimulus program in early 2009, you know, also $800 billion or so, which helped for a period of time, but the effects of that have long since worn off.
Parrott believes that the federal government needs to spend more money to stimulate the economy, but he concedes that given the current political dynamics in Congress, that's not likely to happen. And he says unlike past recessions where governments spent more to boost economic activity, state and local governments also have been further cutting spending in jobs. There's been a 5% decline in government jobs, mostly due to teacher layoffs. And he says it hasn't turned out well for the average working New Yorker.
There's nothing inevitable about this prolonged high unemployment situation. We know the economic policies that need to be pursued. We need stimulus spending at the federal level to get the economy going.
There are some bright spots in the report. Parrott says New York raised the minimum wage this year, though he thinks the long phase-in won't boost wages fast enough. And he says New Yorkers who are wealthy have mostly recovered from the recession, largely due to the stock market rebound and soaring corporate profits. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, last week we were in the midst of a presidential visit. We talked about his stop in Buffalo and Syracuse. He then went on to Binghamton, and the issue of hydrofracking came up. There were protesters there. But in general, with the president in town late last week and Governor Cuomo continuing his trips to upstate New York to deliver things like flood relief and everything else, upstate New York becomes an important place.
Well, there's no question. First of all, when the governor, who is upstate all the time now, because it's part of what we are calling his upstate strategy, comes around. You know, there was an old cartoon which showed Eleanor Roosevelt at the mine, and the miner was saying, here comes Eleanor again. Here comes Andrew again for upstate. He can't be upstate enough because it's where his father faced all kinds of problems, and he's not going to suffer the same fate, that's clear. And people have been holding a stopwatch on how many minutes he's in the city and how many minutes he's upstate, and he's upstate a lot. But when the president of the United States comes to upstate New York, that's a big deal. That is really a big deal. And I think people, even the very virulent anti-frackers, you know, steer clear a little. I mean, they hold up a sign and they say, don't do it. But it's not the same kind of, you know, palpable animus you feel when you hear with the governor. Because after all, it's the governor who gets to make that decision in New York. So Obama comes upstate and they really, the White House really knows what they're doing. And, you know, when he's talking to people, the right people are standing behind him and the cameras are positioned in the right places. And it really is a very big deal. You know, Andrew will spend a lot of time upstate, and he will spend a lot of time upstate because he knows politically it is so important. The president, on the other hand, has no term to run for. He has posterity to run for, but he doesn't have another term in which he has to win election.
Meantime, speaking of upstate New York, Thomas DiNapoli, the comptroller, issued a report that calls into question the job growth and, in fact, says that job creation performance in upstate New York lagged behind the rest of the nation. Now, we just talked about the importance of upstate New York with the governor, and we also talked last week about a little dust-up between the comptroller and the governor. Now this report.
Well, I don't think it is a little dust-up, and I think it's worthy of a second discussion, to be honest with you, because I can't figure out, and the people that I talk to really can't figure out, why this governor has so much apparent animus towards Tom DiNapoli, a sweet man, obviously very competent, without the governor's support, was reelected. We think it may be because DiNapoli comes out of the assembly and Cuomo doesn't really like this. We don't really know. It could be somebody suggested to me that Cuomo doesn't want a second Italian on the statewide ticket. That seems rather far-fetched to me, but anything is possible. But anyway, he keeps on going after him. And now we hear that one of the governor's prime assistants, Ben Lawsky, may be put up to running against the very good controller and the well-liked controller. Well, you know, even Ferdinand the Bull was, you know, docile until he got stung by a bee. And the analogy is clear here. Okay, you're going to come after me for no good reason. I'll return the favor, but this time with some good reasons. You're going around saying you're making things better upstate, and I've got the proof right here that maybe things aren't better upstate. Makes you wonder whether or not Andrew Cuomo will back off, or whether it's the old sort of, you know, visceral, he did something to me, so I got to do something to him sort of response, especially when he didn't do something to you in the first place.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Following word that Entergy will shut down its Vermont Yankee nuclear power plant, Entergy officials in New York say the Indian Point nuclear plant is unaffected by the closure. Indian Point opponents, however, disagree. That story from the Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn.
Entergy announced Tuesday that it will shut down Vermont Yankee, taking it offline by the end of next year. Entergy Wholesale Commodities President Bill Mull said the plant could neither compete against natural gas prices nor continue to bear the impacts of regulations and costs. Mull says the decision to close Vermont Yankee, or VY, is an individual one.
I think I've been pretty frank that, you know, there's a number of challenges we face in the industry right now due to market conditions, but we have not made any decision to shut down any other Entergy facilities. And as it relates to Indian Point, you know, obviously our challenges there are well known, but we continue to plan to push for a relicensing of that facility. And clearly it sits in an entirely different market than VY.
Entergy Corporation announced in July it was cutting 800 jobs amid a nationwide reorganization. The layoffs include Entergy's nuclear plants, with 75 positions to be cut at Buchanan-based Indian Point and 35 positions at Vermont Yankee. Entergy spokesman Jim Steet says Vermont Yankee's closure does not impact these plans or reinstate positions. However, he says it is possible some Vermont Yankee employees could relocate to other Entergy plants, including Indian Point.
I wouldn't say that there would be an addition of jobs at Indian Point, but you know, we've got 1,100 workers there. Now, there are people retiring every 3 or 4 days, you know. And so, you know, there's real opportunity, obviously, to absorb a good number of workers who are willing to move to some of our other sites, that's for sure.
Paul Gallet is president of Westchester-based environmental group, Riverkeeper.
Vermont Yankee's closure's long overdue. The litany of problems the plant has had is extraordinarily long. It's very similar to Indian Point in that regard. Indian Point is fighting for licenses that it is not going to obtain if it fails to obtain its state permits for the cooling system at the plant. Then the federal government has acknowledged that it can't relicense the plant. So given the combined regulatory and operating challenges Indian Point faces, Indian Point's going to go the way of Vermont Yankee.
In 2010, the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation denied a water quality permit for Indian Point, a permit that is necessary for relicensing. Entergy is contesting that denial, and the case is under review. The operating license for Indian Point 2 expires in September, and the license for Indian Point 3 runs through December of 2015. Indian Point 2 will continue to operate until the Nuclear Regulatory Commission renders a decision, which will not be for at least another year. Entergy Steet says there is no connection between relicensing Indian Point and closing Vermont Yankee.
We have the same responsibilities to demonstrate that these plants ought to be relicensed, and so I wouldn't see that there'd be any connection there.
He also says there is little connection between the reasons for closing Vermont Yankee and the status of Indian Point. He says Indian Point produces 4 times the amount of electricity than Vermont Yankee, with a much different revenue stream and market.
Natural gas prices have driven down, you know, wholesale electricity prices, and that makes it more competitive. Indian Point, a much larger plant in a very different market, is in a much better position to deal with that. And so there really aren't very many parallels you can make, you know, between Vermont Yankee and Indian Point. And, you know, for those who say they think this is, you know, this is the beginning or that Indian Point is next, just really are ignoring the facts and I think maybe caught up in their own agendas. I'm very confident that Indian Point can compete in the New York market. It's demonstrated that it has.
Riverkeeper's Gallet says there is a connection.
Well, it shows that momentum is working against the nuclear industry. It shows that Indian Point, which faces some of the same economic pressures that Vermont Yankee faced, is also going to end up in the same place.
He argues there are potential costs for Indian Point that could call into question the plant's viability, such as if Indian Point has to replace its so-called once-through cooling system with a closed-cycle cooling system, as New York State regulators would like and which Entergy is challenging.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
Essex County, New York, was among the areas most damaged when Tropical Storm Irene moved through the region 2 years ago, and it's still recovering. Supervisors of the two hardest-hit towns in the rural Adirondack County still have vivid memories of the day the storm hit, and they mark their remembrances in this conversation with the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley.
The spring of 2011 had been a rough one for Essex County as heavy and unusual rainstorms caused flash flooding that washed out roads and bridges. As Tropical Storm Irene moved up the eastern seaboard on Saturday, August 27th, Town of Jay Supervisor Randy Douglas, who is also chair of the Essex County Board of Supervisors, thought they were prepared for the incoming storm. As the storm intensified, he was in the County Emergency Services Director's office.
And his phone rang, and it was the National Weather Service. And I'm not sure who the guy was on the other end of the phone, and someday I hope to know. Don put him on speakerphone. He said, "Do you happen to know the supervisor in the town of Jay and the supervisor in the town of Blackbrook?" And Don says, "Yeah, one of them's sitting in my office right now." And he said, "Tell him to prepare for the worst flooding in the history of the town of Jay."
Douglas says no one could have been prepared for what happened. Even before the height of the storm, water was flowing over roads, the driving rain and wind bringing trees and power lines down. Nearly 600 homes in the Adirondack County were damaged, the Wells Memorial Library flooded, and the local fire station was demolished by storm waters.
I can't say enough about my town board, my office staff, town, state, county officials, DPW departments, people from all over the country came to help us out. And literally, my staff was sleeping on our floors here, you know, for an hour's worth of sleep. We lost our youth facilities, our water and sewer infrastructure, our senior site. We lost homes. Thank God we didn't lose a life. And we are still recovering.
In the neighboring town of Keene, Supervisor Bill Farabee remembers that he had gone out to check on a pre-existing mudslide and realized Irene was already causing severe damage.
The emotional day was the very next day after the water had receded, and folks were just kind of walking with that, "What the heck has happened to us?" look on their face. What do we do next? And we worked around the clock for weeks, and you know, we turned to our higher-ups to help guide us.
Farabee agrees with Douglas that recovery will take at least 5 years.
We're still about 3 years out to really get things back to where it needs to be. I know that the governor, he has announced, but we haven't got the plan together yet, this community revitalization plan. It'll help us come in and do some more cleanup, and it helps us financially. I mean, that's what we need, is the money to clean up.
Jay Supervisor Randy Douglas is still emotional as he remembers the weeks and months following the storm.
I always considered myself a pretty good leader, but that was trying times. And the hardest part was people coming to you looking for your leadership. And I remember at different times just closing my office door for a 10-minute break and saying, "My God, you can handle this." And it was tough, but I learned a lot about community, people working together, staff so dedicated, and I'm proud of where we're at today. We worked so hard to get where we are at today, and we will fully recover.
It's expected that a flood buyout of homes near the Ausable River will be completed within a few months.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. This week marked the 50th anniversary of the historic Civil Rights March in Washington and the now famous I Have a Dream speech by Martin Luther King Jr. The Innovation Trails Reporting Project has been gathering voices from African-American business owners across New York. Kate O'Connell takes a look now at the progress we've made in our business community and some of the barriers that still need to be overcome.
If we look back, just 50 to 60 years ago, what we found were a lot of African-American businesses that were very, very successful. We had African-American grocery stores. We had numerous banks that were owned by African-Americans that primarily served the African-American community. And if we compare that to today, those numbers have dwindled significantly.
Del Smith is the director of the Center for Urban Entrepreneurship in Rochester. He says half a century after hundreds of thousands of people marched on Washington to fight for civil and economic equality, we've made a lot of progress, but the business community is still catching up.
We know there are significant disparities when it comes to the number of African-American businesses, specifically when we talk about businesses that hire people.
In Rochester, Smith says those disparities translate to only 4% of businesses that hire employees being African-American owned and run. And it's a similar story elsewhere. What it comes down to, Smith says, is a shift away from the traditional model where African-American businesses could grow by catering to African-American communities. Additionally, he says, policies that try to create a level playing field encouraging financial institutions to lend to African-American business owners aren't always effective.
There's not a higher rate of lending to African-American business owners because banks, for example, by nature of their business, are risk-averse. And we know that in our African-American population, things such as wealth, things such as credit are challenges.
Realtor Calm Diamond has firsthand experience with such challenges. She's been in the real estate game for close to a decade, and she's still struggling to find the capital to set up her own operation.
Even to this day, it's a struggle. And, you know, you hear about small businesses. You know, we need money pumped into small businesses. That's going to rebuild the economy. Let's do it. And you would think, okay, hooray, I've been in this business for 9+ years. Somebody's going to be willing to give me a loan.
Diamond says she's reworked her business plan many times trying to attract support. But at the end of the day, she doesn't have a credit history she can take to the banks.
Here I am, being a realtor for 9+ years, and I still have yet to get the funding that I need for my business. And everybody keeps telling me the money's out there, go get it. You're black and you're a minority, there's money for you. It's just much easier said than done.
Smith says it's imperative for upstate cities to invest in businesses like Diamond's if they want to revitalize their urban economies.
We really are trying to revitalize the region and use entrepreneurship as a way to revitalize that region, but yet you do not include the African-American community in that, it's an uphill battle.
Luckily, Smith says, the entrepreneurial space provides a perfect platform for the breakdown of remaining challenges that face the African-American community. He says, at the end of the day, the business sector has the opportunity to become the ultimate equalizer. In an environment that fosters innovation and change, Smith says, the focus will shift. If you have a quality product that consumers want, your background and the colour of your skin won't matter. In Rochester, I'm Kate O'Connell for the Innovation Trail.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1335. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at the same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.